You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It is me, Aaron Carrera, your host, just like Brian, my announcer, said. And it is Thursday, February 8th, 10:03 a.m. if you're listening live. And I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm looking at blue skies out my window. And for anyone who didn't know, we've been experiencing a torrential rains, the storm of the century. I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures. Thankfully, where I'm at, there's been no damage. I can't believe that I'm looking out onto my parking lot in the sky and the ground is dry. It's dry, people. It's crazy. It's just been nonstop rain, which I don't mind. I just feel bad that it's all this rain all at once. You know, Southern California is only somewhat set up for that, like with the reservoirs to lead to the LA River and such. But there were a lot of leaks in my building, thankfully not in our place. A lot of people, if you may have seen the photos, there were mudslides and all kinds of weird damage. And, you know, some, for example, encampments of unhoused people where they needed to be rescued. So anyway, I'm from a land where we always have weather. I'm originally from Minnesota, as many of you know. So, you know, for me, I'm not afraid of driving in the rain, but I've also had the experience of driving into torrential rain and driving through what ended up being such a deep. I remember once I was driving in Minneapolis. It was on East River Road, and I was going from where I was living with my aunt and uncle in Andover to massage school in North Minneapolis. And there had been this big, huge rainstorm, and there had been a pothole that was so deep. And there weren't many cars on the road, and a big truck was in front of me, and the big truck went through it. And I went through it in my little Oldsmobile, and my little Oldsmobile was so low to the ground, I got stuck in the water, and the engine sucked up all that water and forced the engine to completely seize. And so then I had a little flip phone, so I called my dad, who called my uncle for a recommendation, who called my dad back. And then called me, and then I called the tow truck. And by the time the tow truck came, all the water had dried up. And the tow truck driver, who looked a little bit like He-Man or Hulk Hogan, was like, "Wait, what happened?" And I said, "Well, there was a big puddle of water here. And, you know, I drove through it and I got stuck in the water." And he was like, "I don't see a puddle here." And I was like, "Because the sun came out and dried it all up, because I've been waiting here for 3 hours." And he was like, "Sure, it was a puddle." Oh my God. And then this guy, he picks up my car. I get in the tow truck with him to drive to the place. And he looks at me. He's like, "Have you ever thought of doing professional wrestling?" I'm like 18 years old, right? I'm like, "No." And he was like, "You'd be an amazing professional wrestler." But bear in mind, I'm 18 years old, fresh out of eating disorder treatment in the hospital. I don't know exactly what he means, if this is a compliment or not a compliment. Because, you know, when you're out of that kind of situation, your brain is very soft. You're like, "Wait, what?" And then he was like, "Yeah, you know, I'm actually a referee for professional wrestling. This is just my day job." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And he was like, "I came here to rescue you." And I was like, I mean, this man was 50 if he was a day. And no offense to all of you 50-year-old men who hit on 18-year-olds. But if it's not an 18-year-old who's showing, like, happiness that you're hitting on them, don't do it, okay? Don't. It's awkward and uncomfortable, especially if you as the 18-year-old are stuck in this person's pickup truck for the next 20 minutes. Oh, my God, it was insane. And then, you know, they actually didn't fix the car. They got the car back. The engine was running, but there was something else totally wrong with the car. My dad was convinced that they did it on purpose to make us pay more money or for the guy to have me come back so he could hit on me again. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's true. But now that I'm a grown woman, I'm like, oh, for sure, that's what they were doing. I'm not saying all car shops are like that. I'm just saying it was weird that I had just had, like, my dad was like, "I just had this car tuned up." You know, the engine thing made perfect sense because I drove through deep waters without realizing it was deep waters, because you couldn't tell because there was a pothole. But so that is my story about the rain. How did I go on that deviation? Lord never knows. Here we are. Everybody, put your hand on your heart. Let's take a nice deep breath in and out. And we're going to do a little bit of business before we talk about our topic today. As you, if you were listening last week, you may know what we're doing right now in the on the Erin Carrera Show. We're doing a series on acting tools for your life. I have taken so many acting classes in life, and I thought it would be so much fun to use some of these acting tools, especially in light of, you know, it's awards season. So if you've been watching any of the Oscar-nominated or Golden Globe-nominated or SAG Awards-nominated movies or BAFTA-nominated movies, wherever you are, or César or, you know, I think it's the Donatello Awards in Italy. Donatello, Daniele. It starts with a D and it's Italian. Anyway, somebody will tell me. Some Italian author can tell me if it's Donatello or something similar. Anyhow, if you're watching any of these films, let me know. This is a great year for movies. Just a great year. Great year for movies, which I love. I know a lot of people are really into TV series, and I like TV series too, but it's easier to lose me on a TV series because the minute I smell something funky, I'm like very disloyal and I'll go. I'll tell you what my favorite series are, and you'll be like, oh yeah, I see this girl's whack. Like, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Golden Girls. I love Little House on the Prairie, even though there are things that are geographically incorrect on the series. I don't care because it's morally true of heart and noble. I love Sopranos. I love Homeland. That's one of my all-time favorite series with Claire Danes. So you see, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's not that there's other series I don't love, but I need things to really grab me and never let me go, you know? And the minute something starts to let me go, and it's not about if something's slow burn or boring. I like slow burn. I like slow burn a lot. Oh, I loved Money Heist, the first. I haven't watched the new one, but the Casa de Papel, so good. But as soon as things start getting either, you know, sometimes, for example, writers will force characters to make decisions just to surprise the audience, but it's not in line with the character. That drives me crazy. Drives me nuts. I love the new Fargo series. I love the movie Fargo. I love the new Fargo series. Not every season is my favorite, but I loved this latest season with Juno Temple. It was fantastic. Really great. Really good. I also love the season with Kirsten Dunst. So good. Anyhow, Carlo and I quote that back and forth to each other all the time. So, point being, there's so many great movies, and I thought it would be so much fun to use the tools that actors use to create, pardon my language, gonna swear, fucked up characters and fucked up situations. You can also use these tools to reverse engineer your life or to improve your life, and I thought that would be fun. And I also want to mention why we might want to do that. Well, first of all, of course, any of us who wants to improve things in our lives, right? Like I'm working on improving communication with a certain special person in my life. I'll let you guess who. All right, this is probably a lifelong journey, having studied many, many, many long-term relationships. Okay, that I gave it away. You know, I notice, I ask, and I see, and I've witnessed that respect and kindness and friendship and clear communication and building trust and honesty, these are things that go so far in building long-term relationships and really continuing to keep those relationships happy, because it's so easy to take some of those long-term relationships for granted and not even realize you're doing it because you're caught up in the throes of work or kids or money or your parents being unwell or your own health issues or your own addiction issues, your own dreams, or your own anger and your own pain and your own justification and your own desire to blame, perhaps. And it's like, wait a minute. Have you ever had that happen where you are just bopping along in your day to day and then all of a sudden you have an interaction with somebody where you behave in a way that's almost foreign to you? Like you almost can't believe that's you. Like, who is this person? Who is this person that just came out of nowhere and had a hissy fit on somebody? I'm sorry, I don't know if that's a nice term to use anymore or not, but forgive me, PC police, go away. Like, Because I'm sure it's probably has something to do with a hysterectomy, in which case, you know, sorry. Anyhow, I'm shortcutting here. But have you ever done that? Let's call it a temper tantrum. Have you ever done that where you're like, who was this person? How did I just behave this way? How did I just go from thinking, don't we all just think of ourselves as these wonderful, loving, kind people? And then all of a sudden we just snap and have a temper tantrum on someone, or are so angry, or we're being passive aggressive, or we're muttering under our breath. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm not going to say you two are like me, an imperfect being. I'll put the onus on my own actions here. I'll take responsibility for myself as soon as I can anyway. But it's amazing to me. Well, things like acting tools can help us understand where this creature is coming from. Because the goal of an actor is to manifest that character as true, or those feelings as true, right? Like if you're in a scene where you're with your spouse and you need to trigger shock and a fight, you know, if I were to say to you, okay, right now be shocked and fight with your spouse. Maybe if you've been practicing acting for a long time, or if you just got out of a fight with your spouse that they did something that shocked you and you were therefore put into a reactive mode and you're very angry and you're still reeling from the fight, it might be easy for you to do that. But if you're like, no, I'm a newlywed in the honeymoon phase, I don't think I'll ever feel that way about my partner. I love you. That's wonderful. I hope that's true. It would probably be very hard. I'm telling you, the day will come where you two will have something that shocks you. And it'll be something silly, like that they put the dishes away wrong, right? That they stacked the dishwasher wrong, that they put the hangers the wrong way in a closet. It'll be something really mundane that really, how could that ever bother you? But of course, it's also the question is, who would ever put their dishes in the dishwasher this way? What is wrong with you, right? And you will lose your mind. And acting tools, much like any spiritual work we do, meditation, awareness, these acting tools will help you go, oh, sure. So if I build up everything that happened in this day and every way that over time my spouse is always putting the dishes in the wrong way and I've asked them to put the dishes in the right way, and I even think there's a consciousness in me that really thinks there's a right way to do this, and maybe there is a way that is optimal for cleanliness. I'm defending my own little inner Scandinavian here, but maybe there is a way that is optimal for cleanliness or optimal for not breaking things, which I'm very clumsy, so I certainly cannot claim to never break things. I break things, well, my energy breaks things too. I remember my best girlfriend, Erica, used to say, never give Erin the real glassware if she's angry or PMSing, because if my energy's off, there was this time I was at dinner with Erica and her husband and my boyfriend at the time, and she had poured a little red wine into my glass, and I was so off that day. I reached for the glass. I didn't even touch it, and the glass shattered, and everyone saw it, and they all went, whoa. You know, so I have witnesses, and one of those witnesses was a Taurus who does not believe in crazy. He's a deeply spiritual, I wouldn't say spiritual, thoughtful and kind man, but he does not believe in astrology or psychics or palm reading or energy or chakras, right? He didn't believe in any of that. He saw it. He saw my hand get an inch from the glass and the glass just shatter. So, you know, now, okay, could there be a scientific explanation to this? Sure. Perhaps the glass was really hot and the wine was cold, or, right, if you've ever pulled cold water into a hot glass, you've maybe had that experience. But, you know, I don't think that's it. It was just regular room temperature red wine in a regular wine glass. So anyhow, I'm saying these acting tools can be very helpful with learning why you behave the way you do, or perhaps learning why other people behave the way they do. And later I was thinking it'd be fun if we did monologues together, which I know is a strange thing to suggest because I'm talking to you all who are listening on the radio from wherever you are. But I was thinking if we did a little monologue and you could try on a character for fun. You know what's beautiful about trying on a character is that you get to walk a mile in their moccasins, right? So I remember once I worked with somebody who's a wonderful director, and he was telling us a story about, and I don't want to name drop, but he's an amazing, amazing, famous director, made a film that often hits people's best movie lists. And he's a very dear, tender, kind man, and he's making his last movie, and he's elderly, and he makes wine, so now you know who he is. Okay, so he was telling us, I was at the callbacks, and he had, you know, 50 of us at the callbacks together, and he was having us play theater games and mixing and matching on scenes. And he said, I want everyone to relax and play and have fun. I don't want you to think of it as competition or like you're on or you only get this one chance. I want to just see who you are and get to know you. And then he started telling us stories about a movie that he had cast, and he had everyone get together for dinner the night before they were filming, and he wanted everyone to kind of live in, everyone came together in this house for a weekend, I think it was, before they started filming. And he just wanted everyone to hang out and start spending time together. And he said he noticed that people were already, quote unquote, getting into character. But then he noticed something else. Now, one of these actors was Marlon Brando. He said it was amazing to watch Marlon Brando get into character, because it wasn't that Marlon Brando left himself. Marlon Brando would talk about it and talk about how he was seeking every place inside himself that matched the character he was playing. And then the director said, I started noticing all these other actors. I started really watching what would happen when they would act. And I realized it wasn't that actors were necessarily becoming the characters. Almost that the characters were becoming the actors. That as the actors continued to get to know themselves in these situations, then suddenly the characters and the actors sort of become an amalgamation of the two. And it's really interesting to me, because I think, you know, it's not like actors become these killers, or they become these insane people, or they become, you know, like if you have to play a killer and you've never killed someone in your life, you know, you don't need to kill someone to know how that feels. You merely need to remember the last time you killed a mosquito, as Marlon Brando says. I didn't make that up. Marlon Brando did. By the way, if you hear the weird noise, it's because they changed trash day to Thursday. Sorry about that. But here we are. I don't like to ignore the things that are happening around me. I like to be inclusive and say, welcome. I am so grateful to my trash collectors, because without them, let me tell you, I couldn't open my windows, right? Anyhow, if you get to know acting tools, you start thinking about why your spouse behaves the way they do. You might have a lot more compassion for them, or why your stupid boss behaves the way they do. Maybe you don't want compassion for your dumb boss. Maybe you do. Maybe if you understand where they're coming from, you can understand a little better how to work with them rather than work against them or feel like they're working against you. How to understand why, honestly, even when it's personal, it's really not personal, because it's personal to them, right? If you're dealing with a difficult boss, they've got their stuff. That it wouldn't matter if it was you or Joan or Lisa or Craig or Darius. It's the boss is the boss dealing with their stuff. And now different humans are going to behave differently to the boss. One might be a suck up. One might be a rebel. One might be a befriend, right? One might hide. But it's always going to be the boss's issues. So if you understand where the boss is coming from, you don't disinclude yourself. You deeply include yourself, but you might come up with different ways of working with that person that are inclusive of the boss as well as yourself. See where I'm going with all this? All right. So a little bit of business. If you like what you're hearing and you want to come work with me, not as an actor, but for example, over at onetolisten.com/Erin, and that is Erin with an E, E-R-I-N, onetolisten.com/Erin, you'll see I have a number of email-based services, time-based services. You can find me for chat, for phone call. I also do video chat. I just haven't signed on for video in a while, but if you want to do a video chat, I'm happy to video chat with you. And I love working with you at onetolisten.com. We can do anything from straight psychic channeling to astrology to tarot to life coaching to chakra balancing to Reiki. to career coaching, love coaching, to heck, even acting coaching. Actually, do you know, I even have some people who have called me to work through some writing with me. I think that's interesting. I'm totally down for whatever you need. If I can be of service to you, I'm here for you. I love to be here for you. It's really a great joy. And if you want to come chat with us on Facebook and ask some questions or share what's going on in your life, I also welcome that. If you're at 12radio.com, come on over to chat with us on Facebook. It'll bring you to our 12 radio group. And if you've never joined us, just ask to join. We'll welcome you in. If you're listening live, pinned to the top of the page is my banner, and in the comments section below, that's where we chat with each other. And I see Renee in there and Chris. So hey, everybody, hello. So happy to see all of you here. Let's see. So today's acting tool is environment. Okay. So we're going to talk about what that means as an acting tool. Oh, for those of you who weren't listening last week, by the way, it was being in your body, being aware of your body, being present, being, you know, we do a lot of body scan meditations here on the Erin Carrera Show, but also in my house. I do them, well, probably daily, maybe not daily, but regularly, 5 times a week, because I often do them at night too when I'm trying to fall asleep. What I do when I'm trying to fall asleep is I actually do a body scan meditation, but I imagine that angels are giving me a massage. It's very relaxing, let me tell you. So last week was about being in your body, being aware of your body. This week is about environment. And one thing that we used to do in this one acting class I was in one of these acting classes where you do scene work. And you have to really set, I was in 2 acting classes like this, actually. You literally, we would bring in set pieces. I mean, it was intense, hardcore. We would bring in set pieces and do hair and makeup and wardrobe for ourselves. It was like a little mini theater production to make it as real as you possibly could. And the very first exercise we would do in one of the acting classes I was in was called environment. And the goal was to simply live in an environment on stage for 5 minutes. So my first environment, for example, I brought in my music rehearsal room and I warmed up. I did it at the same time as another actor, and that actor did like a morning routine. But I did my warm-ups, my vocal warm-ups as a singer. And it was really intense because it was very hard to not feel like I was performing, but to literally just live and do what I do for vocal warm-ups, which is some stretching, some head rolls, some throat massage, some jaw massage. And then I start with some humming, and then I start doing warm-ups. And then by the time I was doing my vocal exercises and about to start actually singing, then it was time. But it took me a long time to not be performing for people. It was wild. Now, of course, the goal as an actor, yes, you're performing for the camera, you're performing for people. But the goal is to literally be living, just be living in extreme circumstance, truly living. But then there's technicalities, right? Facing the light, letting the light hit you in a certain way. Now, that's not for our discussion today. About the technicalities of it, although I'm going to add that to the list because I actually do think there are things that are worth talking about, technicalities, body position, right? Like I learned things about, like for example, if you're ever a woman negotiating with a man and you face them head on, men find that aggressive, whereas if you sit sideways to a man, the man will find that less aggressive and will like you more. And I know that's some bullshit right there. I know. But on the other hand, if it helps you negotiate, why not use that little trick, right? Whereas if before you go into a meeting, if you do power poses, we've talked about power poses before, you know, it can help empower you. They're tools to use at your discretion. Let's put it that way. And it's good to know some of this stuff, even if some of it is some bullshit, right? Like, that's some crap right there. that I'm supposed to like flirt to negotiate. You know, I'm from the days of before Me Too. I am so grateful for Me Too. I don't want any woman to ever have to go through some of the Me Too things I did go through. And maybe I'll even share some of those stories at the end of all of this too, because I think those are valuable to talk about too. Maybe, I don't know, some of them are painful. We'll see. And maybe you don't want to hear them, but maybe it's nice to share some of those stories so that everybody understands they're not alone. I mean, that's what Me Too did for me. When I realized, sorry, I'm going to cry a little bit, how not alone I was in my experience. And how traumatized so many people were by things from the terrible to the mundane. And once you've gone through the terrible, then the mundane can be very frightening, right? It was really helpful to know I wasn't alone. But today we're talking about environment. We're talking about environment. As an actor, the goal of having an environment, right? It's like wardrobe, or it's like hair and makeup, right? It's like the goal of your environment is to help you be in character, to help you go through the scene. And of course, sometimes if you've ever seen theater in a black box, for example, you as the actor have to create all of that in your mind. You're just making the life more real for yourself and therefore for your scene partner, the director, and therefore for the audience. But how do we reverse engineer this as just people, right? I'm not going to suggest that we're all supposed to have these Marie Kondo, Swedish death cleaned, uncluttered environments. For many people, that's very important. If that's important to you, great. I realized for myself, it's actually not that important. It's sometimes, like right now, my office is a little over the top. It's a little over the, I mean, I'm bordering on hoarder here. It doesn't bother me creatively, though. It doesn't stop me personally from writing, singing, rehearsing, acting, doing yoga, doing my ballet warm-ups. Doesn't stop me from doing any of my work. It doesn't. My mind doesn't get captured by the clutter. It's just that when I think about it and I turn around and I look at the stack of books and magazines and bottles I need to return to Creation Juicery, I go, yeah, I should really give away some books and an instrument and get rid of those bottles. But it doesn't stop me personally from doing my creative work. Now, it would probably stop some people. Or think about your bedroom. This is an easy example. I want you to think about, here's what I'm going to explain about the bedroom. And then we're going to go through and think about what you want out of life and how you can create an environment that supports it, right? So like here in my little studio, we have a two bedroom place, and the second bedroom is my studio, where I've got my little voiceover booth and my desk where I do my readings, my corner of my cluttered desk where I have my tarot cards. I've got bookshelves. This bookshelf in here is for my to-be-read books, thousands of them. My little hat corner, because I love hats. I collect hats, cowboy hats, sun hats, baseball caps. Oh, my God, it's crazy. Actually, I've got hats everywhere in the house. I've got my one keyboard, my piano. I've got my two keyboards that are in their cases. I've got my three guitars. I've got my lights for when we film things. And then I've got that wall of shame, which is my stack of bottles and paintings I haven't hung up yet, and books and magazines that I have to put away or give away. All right, I get it. The room needs work. But as a creative person who's got a lot going on, it really works for me, honestly. I've got this area here for the books where I'm going to get to eventually, you know. Eventually I'll read them, or I won't. I've got my desk where I know where everything is. Might look messy to some people, but I know exactly where every single thing is. So if someone was like, oh, do you have any AAA batteries? You'd be like, yep, third drawer down in the very back. If somebody was like, do you have a stapler? I could be like, yep, first drawer, dig underneath all of my extra earbuds. Somebody was like, do you have an Italian textbook? I'd be like, I've got seven of them. There's two on this bookshelf, on the fourth bookshelf down. And then if you go to the bookshelf in the living room, you would go to, there's two in the living room. So go to the one behind the movie posters. And if you go to the very bottom, you know, like I just know where everything is. And that's probably my Pisces brain. You know, Pisces can be float away, but also when it comes to stuff like that, like it's a mess, but I know exactly where everything else is. Okay, now, am I justifying a mess? No, I'm telling you it works for me because I got my music corner, I've got my filming corner, I've got my to be read corner, I've got my workstation, right? Let's talk about the bedroom. We do not keep our computers or our phones in the bedroom. Now, our bedroom has, because both my husband and I do have a lot, we have a lot. We just have too small of a house for us, right? We really, by all rights, need a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom house. Because we each need our own office, plus our bedroom, plus a guest room. We really should each have our own bathroom, plus a guest bathroom. So we have room for all our stuff, right? Because we're both like this. We both have deep investments in our things, right? For my husband, it's his sports, his soccer, and his weights, and his books, and his workstation, right? So, but our bedroom is sacred. So our bedroom doesn't have any work stuff in it at all. It does have clothes. It does have art, a lot of art. And it's got a lot of romance stuff, right? But we do not work in there. We don't even have a TV in there. We just don't. Well, the bedroom is for sleeping and the other bedroom stuff, right? Making love. We keep it restful. We keep it sacred. And the reason why is so that we are really honoring that part of our lives. And I really think it makes a big difference. Now, I learned that years ago. I don't even remember where I learned that. I think maybe I learned it from a feng shui person, or maybe I learned it from someone who was a sacred feminine practitioner, you know, like a sexual, embracing one's sexual self practitioner. Mama Gina maybe taught it to me, if you know who that author is. I'm not sure, honestly, where I learned it. But my entire relationship with my husband, we've always kept the bedroom special. Of course, if you're in a hotel room, it's a little different, right? And if it's important to you, watch a movie in bed with your spouse. This is not about this, there's one right way to do it. This is about, I want you to think about what you want out of your bedroom and or any relationship that may or may not share your bedroom. Some of you may have your own bedroom and you don't want a partner, and that's great. But if you do, think about the environment of your existing bedroom and if it supports a love relationship or your relationship, and does it support what you and or the person you share a bedroom with might want out of that relationship, right? So that if you want a really big, sexy, fulfilled love relationship in the privacy of your bedroom, does your bedroom support that? That's something to ask yourself. And if it doesn't, great. You can take steps to support that. Like right now, I want to repaint our bedroom, but I can't decide the color. And the truth is, I'm not a good painter, so it might not happen for a while. And I'm okay with that. But like eventually, that's something I want to do. Because I am really, really, truly, I prioritize things, right? It's like, well, our bedroom's still pretty beautiful. It just needs a coat of paint, you know. But think about what a bedroom might look like that supports a love relationship for you, right? The love relationship that you want. Or if your love relationship isn't going the way you want, what in your environment, how could you set your environment up to help you with that relationship? Here's another example, okay? Exercise. Is exercise important to you? Do you want to exercise but don't? Can you set up your environment in such a way that will at least help you? So for example, if you, for example, want to work out, but you kind of don't do it and you always kind of forget, and then the day goes by and then you're tired and you don't do it. Oh, there's another day I didn't do it. What if, for example, you set up a new habit? You set a timer on your phone 20 minutes before you're going to go to bed, half hour before you go to bed, whatever, when you're getting ready for bed. You pull out your workout clothes. You pull out your workout clothes, your tennis shoes, and you set it out either in your bedroom or in your bathroom so that the first thing you do in the morning is you see those workout clothes and ideally you put them on, right? Or you pack them in your duffel bag and bring them to work if you are just getting up and going to work. So that you have them with you. Now, I know this might lead to, if you go right to work, it could lead to you just carrying these gym clothes around in a duffel bag for 3 months. But you can make these steps, right? So that if then the goal is, okay, now I've got these gym clothes I'm carrying around in the duffel bag for 3 months, but I never actually make it to the gym. What if you scheduled something in your calendar where you've got your gym clothes in the duffel bag, you keep it in your car, and once a week you schedule something with a friend to meet them at the gym, right? Like, how do you support yourself? Now, that's more of a time management thing than an environment thing, but it's still the same principle, right? So I want you to think about something that you want in your life. Let's say you want to write a book and you are not working on it for some reason. Now, I'm not necessarily saying you should lose sleep and get up an extra hour early. I am saying you can find time. You can carve time out. You could watch less television. You could do less social media. You could say, rather than go for an hour long walk, I'm going to do a half hour walk run. And then I'm going to give half an hour a day to writing a book. And I know a lot of people are perfectionists out there who will say half an hour is just not enough time to write a book, you dumb. No, it is actually. It is if you sit down and you give yourself 30 minutes every day or 30 minutes 5 days a week, whatever, without your phone on, without distractions, or even with your phone on, I don't know, depends on who you are. How can you set your environment up? How can you set it up to succeed? I promise you, half an hour a day, you really can get some work done. You really can. And then what you might find is, you know, I learned that actually, the half hour a day practice from my mom. So when I was little, she bought a piano and she gave us piano lessons and she had a rule. You had to sit at the piano for 20 minutes every day. She would set the egg timer. And at first we would sit there and plunk around on the piano and complain and thrash. But my parents were very strict. They weren't so strict that we would be like yelled at or beat or in trouble or anything like that if we didn't practice. But we had to sit there for 20 minutes. And they were strict enough that we didn't get up from that bench. We knew that if we did, we would get in trouble in another way. We'd have a benefit taken away or we wouldn't get to go play or whatever it was, right? So, and they were really quite disciplined with us. Well, eventually, after a few days of complaining and being a brat and throwing a temper tantrum, eventually I would just look at the music and start practicing. And do you know that eventually I started to be able to actually play the piano. And that 20 minutes grew into 30 minutes, grew into an hour. And I got to the point where in high school I was playing all kinds of things, Rhapsody in Blue, I could play any Mozart, I was playing Chopin, I was playing all manner of difficult pieces. And I was singing, and I was very dedicated as a musician. Now, I wasn't as dedicated to piano as I was to singing, of course. I loved singing best, of course. But I rehearsed every day. And do you know now, even when 3 weeks have gone by, I haven't played piano maybe, I can sit down and I know how to pick up. Like, I've been replaying some, playing through all the Mozart, and I have a Mozart book. So I've been playing through a bunch of Mozart piano concertos. And at first, I'm a little rusty, and my fingers work a little differently now because I have rheumatoid arthritis than they did when I was young. But I can still play all that, and that's because my mom set that stupid egg timer every day. So I'm telling you, 30 minutes a day can take you far. We just sometimes have to let go of our idea that it's supposed to be some, you know, perfect situation where every morning I get up at 4:45 a.m. and I meditate and I call in the muse, and then I make a dark, strong cup of coffee with all of the perfect ingredients for my brain, my metabolism, and then I write unencumbered for an hour. And then every day you get up at 7:15 and go, shit, I gotta go take a shower. What if, rather than aiming for 4:45, what if you went to bed half an hour early and you set an intention in your brain, or you set the alarm for 6:40, and you gave yourself 20 minutes to write a day. Just to see how it felt, just to see what you could come up with, just to show yourself you could. And if you're not able to, I would even challenge that and say, what are you afraid of, right? Like, because really, ultimately, it starts to become, if you're procrastinating, you're denying, you're distracting, or you're like, no, I really do need to be looking at all of my Facebook videos. I mean, I get it. I really do like reading my magazines, and I really do like doing every day the Wordle and the spelling bee and the other one where you on the New York Times where you pick these four things go together and these four things go together. Connections, I think it's called. And then I like to do the crossword. I'm telling you, I could spend an hour and I could justify it preventing Alzheimer's, preventing dementia, playing these games on the New York Times. I could. And sometimes I do if I really need to relax. It's how I relax, doing that kind of thing. Those silly word games. But honestly, you know, sometimes it's avoidance, right? Sometimes that's me just avoiding other work that I either need to do or really want to do. Now, I'm a lifelong artist who's really built in discipline into my life. So whenever I'm not doing something because I either have to do it and it or I want to do it and I'm not doing it, I know it's because there's a learning curve or I'm afraid. And I work with myself and I tell myself, like, okay, you don't know how to do this particular thing. If it's something I don't know how to do and I'm afraid, but you know, you'll figure it out. Just ask questions. Just start reading about how to do it. Just take a couple of tries, maybe not your highest, most important high-risk tries, but make a couple of tries and see how it goes. And then ask a friend for help or ask an expert for help or go do some research. But don't do so much research that it becomes distraction, you see? It's easy to make too much research distraction, isn't it? So what can you do if you're thinking about, let's say, for we go back to this example of writing a book. Whatever your goal is, you want to buy a new house. You want to pay off your debt. I want you to take some time walking through your home or walking through your office. And I want you to just think about your environment and ways that you are either not supported or ways that you could set yourself up for support. Perhaps you want to feng shui your house. I remember when I lived with this former roommate of mine, Linda, years ago, she hired a feng shui person to come in, and it was not cheap. It was an amazing woman named Deborah. She was so great. And she gave us all of these, you know, Linda told her what she wanted and I told her what I wanted in life. And she gave us all these things to do. And we had went down to Chinatown. It was so fun. We went down to downtown to Chinatown and we bought all the stuff. We invested some money. It's true. But we bought all of these things to shift the energy of our apartment that we shared. And do you know, right after that, all sorts of things started to happen. I just remember that thing started to happen. I remember that at that exact moment, that roommate started doing Arbonne and she started doing really great with it and started being traveling all over with Arbonne and meeting all these people. And I remember that I started, my sister decided to move and I decided to move away from that roommate and move in with my sister. But that was ultimately a good thing because then someone eventually came and took my place that roommate ended up marrying. So like, you know, like all these wonderful things happened. Now, maybe some of these things would have happened anyway, because she and I were both already on the certain paths that we were improving, but boy, things just started clicking into place for us. Or perhaps you want to look at, okay, I want to buy a new house. And in order to get this house ready to sell so I can get maximum value, I need to do this. These are easy things, right? But what if your goal is to pay off debt? Is there something in your environment where you could help yourself? Now, my thing would be like, Could you just set aside an hour on a weekend to see if, take a look at your energy bills. Are you spending money on energy? And I know we're talking about pennies. If you are spending a lot of money going out to dinner, could you get yourself, save a little money doing something gourmet at home? Could you buy yourself some nice cookware, cook nice gourmet meals at home? Could you make a habit that would change things enough that over the course of 2 years, you could pay off debt, saving a couple hundred bucks a month? I'm not sure. This is for you to go through your home and think about, is there a way that I could, like, what is it? Yeah, I'm tired at the end of the day and I like nice food, but could I prep meals so that I'm not spending so much money going out to dinner? I don't know, right? These are things that you can go through your environment and think about. All right, I'm trying to save money and I do. This is where Swedish death cleaning or Marie Kondo might come in handy, right? If you need to make a big change to an area of your life, but you don't know how, if you make a big change for the positive in another area of your life, right? Like my husband recently did a huge purge of all of our DVDs and CDs, except for a few very special favorites. Because we don't have a DVD player and we haven't for like 5 years. We don't have a CD player. Neither of us have had a CD player for like, I don't know, years and years. And I was like, what are we holding on to this for? That's not how we watch film. That's not how we listen to music. It's just not what we're using right now. And maybe there's value if we had a bigger space to getting a record player and a CD player, but we don't have that space right now. And living for a day that might never come, or might come 13 years in the future, or might come next year, who knows? We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. It was sort of, we just have too much stuff in our house. So he did a big Marie Kondo on all of that. And then suddenly he had room for his weights. See how that works? So that he doesn't have to spend all that time driving the 25 minutes to the gym and then going and doing the gym in the fluorescent lights that he was growing to hate and then driving the 25 minutes back, right? It was a big time investment. Now he can just do it every day here at the house, right? And not clutter up our space too badly so that when my parents come over, it's not everybody sitting on gym equipment, right? That's because we live in a small space, right? So, environment. It's about creating the environment for the life you want to live. As an actor, you are creating an environment that your character lives in. You're creating the environment for the scene to take place. I remember once I was doing a scene. Have you ever seen that movie Clute? The movie with it's from like the early 70s, I believe. Jane Fonda plays a prostitute who is connected to a series of murders somehow. And Donald Sutherland is the detective Clute, and he's trying to get her to help him solve these murders. And anyway, I was doing a scene from that movie, and we set up a scene in this girl's apartment, and we were wearing 1970s clothes, and I did my hair in a 1970s way, and we set up there's a balcony in the theater where we did the class, so we set it up. So there's this, it's a scene where there's a person like trying to break into her apartment, and we had one of the other actors. Actually, I remember the scene partner had one of the other actors like scare me from behind. I didn't, right? Like it was like you should really tell your fellow actors you're gonna do that. But after the first time, I knew it was gonna happen. But it was like we were setting it up to try to make it to surprise the audience. But what also happened for us is that we really had this real environment to play with. Yes, of course you're aware you're on stage. Although I remember this interview with Leonardo DiCaprio after he made Gangs of New York with Martin Scorsese was the director and with the brilliant Daniel Day-Lewis and I think Cameron Diaz is in that movie. Anyway, he was talking about how he would they would shoot overnights and he was so in character sometimes. And the environment they set up was so real and it was so in character. Sometimes he would be walking at dawn through the city and he would feel like he could still see all of the old-fashioned city that he had just been working with because he was still living the character's life, still living in the environment. That's really trippy and that's totally possible. Well, if an actor can get so into character that he's seeing things, right? you can set up your environment to help you succeed that greatly, right? You don't have to be an Oscar award-winning actor to use your environment to help you with your life. So if you want a big change and you don't know how, you could do what I'm going to do eventually, right? Which is clean out my closet. You could say, where am I? You know, like maybe I should clean out all of these old foodstuffs and buy some nice fresh food and some beautiful flowers to enhance my environment. Maybe I should set up my bathroom so that it's relaxing and not messy and so that I want to take baths in there. And I'm going to buy myself some candles and some bath salts. Maybe I should set up my bedroom so it's sexy and, you know, take all of my work stuff out of there and put it on the dining room table instead. I don't know, whatever, right? Maybe rather than eat standing over the kitchen and then feel deprived, maybe I should set up my dining room table somehow. Like maybe I should just take a little time to think about what I could shift, what I can do with my environment to really set up the life I want to live, to set up a relationship in a way that it's going to be really benefiting my relationship. Maybe for my kids, you know, maybe we could set up our house so it's a little more set up that this is their little nook for doing homework and this is their nook for play so that when they're doing their homework, they don't feel tempted to go do their online gaming, right? So that it's like, okay, 30 minutes of homework at your homework station and then you can go play, you know, you can go online and, you know, do your video games for whatever. I don't know. I don't have kids. I know it's not always that easy. I just see that that's how my parents did it with us. And that's how my siblings do it with their kids. So, and they're certainly not perfect parents or perfect children, but, you know, it's about working with what you got, right? So sometimes I see parents do amazing things with their kids. I've seen, I used to have these clients that I would go back in the day and they had all of these money board games and they're like, oh, we want to teach our children the value of money, and they would make it fun to learn about money. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a brilliant idea. Of course, make it fun to learn about money, make it fun to learn about how interest works, make it fun to learn about how interest works and why when you save money and put it into a bank you make interest, why that's fun, and make it an interesting thing so that you are better set up years later to understand these things a little differently. Unlike the way that some of us named Aaron learned, which is the hard way. Right? I mean, I learned algebra. Trust me, I learned how compound interest rates work because I did know how to do algebra, but I did not associate that with a better life for myself until years later, let me tell you, years and years. So far as actors in our acting class for life, we've learned to be in our bodies and to love our bodies, to being in them, and to think about what we want out of life and to create an environment that supports that. And to close out the show, I thought I would read my favorite poem, not my favorite poem, one of my favorite poems in the top. Of course, my computer's freezing. Don't freeze on me, computer. The page that I'm on is freezing. I wonder if the whole thing is freezing and if you haven't heard this whole show. All right, let me go to where I pulled it up on my computer, but I can just as quickly pull it up on my phone. I wanted to read you one of my all-time favorite poems because it gets down to a lot of what we're trying to create in our lives. And I read this poem often on this show, because I love it and because I think it's beautiful for us to hear and take in. It's called Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine. Give bread. Give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. And I read that poem to you because I want to know, where are you feasting on your life? And more importantly, where are you not feasting on your life? And how could you change that? Could you change that by being in your body? Could you change that by changing something in your environment or something in your schedule? All right, everybody. Well, I love you so much. And if you want to come find me over at 12listen.com/Erin, you can come find me. I'll be there this afternoon. I'll be there tomorrow afternoon. I'll be there. I'm not going to be available much on Saturday. I'll be there Sunday morning early, Sunday evening. You get the picture. I'm around. If you don't see me, make a callback request, schedule an appointment. I would love to talk with you. And until next week, I love you. Bye-bye.